Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
The curious similarity between Ebola and ISIS, as lawmakers begin to argue on Capitol Hill over how to address the military crisis in Iraq, we note just how much Ebola and ISIS are manifestations of fear. The ISIS threats of terrorism, the beheading videos, and the fear they inspire around the world. The deadly, incurable Ebola virus that infects people with fear much more readily than the virus can be transmitted itself. And in both cases, eradication involves the very risky and difficult work of boots on the ground. For ISIS, the idea of going beyond airstrikes — today U.S. planes hit targets near Baghdad — beyond airstrikes to a military ground assault in Iraq with U.S. troops, that's controversial right now. But less so with Ebola, as President Obama will send 3,000 U.S. troops and personnel to West Africa to tackle the difficult work of setting up treatment centers and helping to restore the health infrastructure in Liberia and Sierra Leone to eradicate Ebola there once and for all. Ebola has killed 2,400 people in West Africa since the latest outbreak started in February, according to the World Health Organization, and the death count is growing, but not as fast as the fear of Ebola worldwide. Joining me now to talk about viruses and fear is Dr. Pratish Tosh, an infectious disease physician and researcher at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Doctor, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So how is fear and the actual infectious qualities of the Ebola virus in some sort of tension and conflict as you see it as a doctor?
Well, Ebola does cause a lot of fear and social disruption, in part because it, for the people it does infect, it causes death in over half of them. And we really see two epidemics going on. One is the epidemic that's happening in West Africa, which has claimed over 2,400 lives. And then there's the epidemic of fear elsewhere, where people are concerned about, say, in the United States, of this becoming a community infection here, which is really unlikely to happen. But then I think people are losing focus of what needs to be done in West Africa to stop this.
Is the priority for folks in the United States to think about mutations into an airborne Ebola or transmission through transportation networks? Or should it be something more focused on developing the infrastructure for public health in places like West Africa?
Well, when we see Ebola outbreaks, these are really symptoms of poor healthcare infrastructure, public health infrastructure, and access to good healthcare, just as you would expect in a cholera epidemic. Now, there's been a lot in the news right now about the possibility of mutations of the virus, which I think is important things to discuss, in that Ebola is not a human infection, meaning that it is coming from some sort of animal reservoir. And that whenever we have an animal, a zoonotic disease coming from an animal, the more it replicates in humans, the more it wants to be, humanized. And the mutations that are being discussed and are possible, that's sort of a worst case scenario, but something that I think we need to think about if we are going to get the appropriate sort of political will in the international community in order to do something about this.
So in ancient epidemiological terms, flu used to be an animal virus, but because it spent so much time in humans, it mutated to the point where it was easily transmitted human to human. Ebola hasn't reached that stage, but if it should find a huge human reservoir, it could eventually reach that stage. Is that the sort of trajectory here?
I think that is the worst case scenario. I mean, we look at really any new influenza virus, for example, the 1918 Spanish flu, which killed over 50 million people. That initially started in birds and then became more infecting humans and more easily infecting humans. Now, that is not something — I mean, a few things to say about Ebola. That has not been seen. And right now we know very much about the transmission of Ebola, and we know it's through direct contact, and there's nothing right now to suggest that it's airborne transmitted. But it also brings up the other point that these are viruses that can mutate. And if we don't put effort now to shut down this outbreak, then the possibilities of development of more mutations, and really it's difficult to say what could happen. And so it's on the international community now to put forth the effort to shut this down in West Africa.
So what can these 3,000 troops, do you think, do, setting up what apparently are 17 treatment centers around West Africa? And comment, if you could, on what it must be like to be a healthcare worker in one of these areas where everything has broken down.
On the ground, I think that the military presence will help to create a situation of security and stability to allow the healthcare workers and epidemiologists to really contain this outbreak. And I have several of my colleagues, former colleagues, who are there in Liberia and West Africa, who are telling the stories of this is real decimation of infrastructure, and it's those scenes that you would have expected in a plague epidemic several centuries ago.
And so what is the stage? You have to get fresh water, you have to get treatment centers, you have to quarantine people. Is there a sequence of events that these troops would basically be involved in to really restore this health infrastructure and prevent the wider infection that you've described?
Yeah, there are three things that have really been shown to stop these Ebola outbreaks. And this is the experience has been since 1976. And we know that if you identify patients early and get them to medical care so that we can hopefully support them to get them to live. But also, if you identify them early and know that they potentially have Ebola, they can prevent the transmission to other people, including healthcare workers and close contacts, friends and relatives. And then the last thing is contact tracing. Find out who are the people who have been in contact with these patients with Ebola so that you can put them in quarantine so that they don't spread the infection any further. And you know, these are the things that have been shown to stop these outbreaks since 1976. And so these are the things that will stop this outbreak. However, it is really difficult to do those three things in the setting of poor infrastructure and, say, chaos. And so having some security and stability is really essential to the mission of stopping this outbreak.
Finally, how does fear on the ground in West Africa complicate this sense of chaos and the task of these troops coming in? And how much can education help to permanently assure people that the steps that they take to deal with Ebola will actually work? Because there's a lot of mythology and, even mysticism associated with this.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And there's been problems in West Africa in that when you have these healthcare workers and government workers going, say, door to door and trying to find out who have been in contact with someone with Ebola, if they find somebody who's sick, they'll take them to the hospital. And what the family members see is their family member was well, but then they come back from the hospital in a body bag. And so that brings up these images and thoughts for them that maybe it is they're getting the infection and dying in the hospitals. And so they are reluctant to tell the authorities that they have someone who is sick or have been in contact. And it's a matter of fear and a matter of needing to educate.
Dr. Pratish Tosh is a Mayo Clinic infectious disease physician and researcher speaking to us from Rochester, Minnesota. Dr. Tosh, thanks so much.
Thank you so much.